This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, horse people. This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 26th, 2013, episode 689.
Good morning!
It's Thursday.
Let's kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
Yes, sirree, it's Thursday, so that means you only have one day left to surf the web for off-kilter classifieds and email them to me, jennifer@horseradionetwork.com, with bad ads in the subject line. On tomorrow's live show, like we do every Friday, the reading of the ads will reveal the top two, to whom we will present the following. A gift pack from Dr. Rose's Remedies. Dr. Rose's Remedies Skin Treatment Salve and Spray are 100% all-natural products. They are anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal. Dr. Rose's are made with all human-grade ingredients. They can be used for most skin conditions, from hot spots in dogs to rain rots and wounds on horses. You can find them online at drrosesremedies.com. And prize number two, 5 free bags of feed, forage, or supplement from Triple Crown Nutrition. Triple Crown Nutrition offers a complete lineup of fortified feeds, forages, and supplements to satisfy the needs of your whole herd. Whether you're looking for higher fat, lower carbs, a senior diet, or sound nutrition for a young growing horse, Triple Crown Nutrition has the answer. And you can find them online at triplecrownfeed.com. Now sit back and enjoy this assortment of counter-cantering co-host commentary and lame lists from previously aired non-award-winning episodes.
Jamie, did you take a look at the medals? They have posted now what the medals are going to look like for London and for the Olympics, and I posted them on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning if everybody wants to check them out. What do you think?
You know, it would just be an absolute honor to have one. I don't care what they look like. They could be yogurt tops for all I care. I don't care.
That was the consensus, is that there's a picture of all three there. And the consensus was, of all the comments, and everybody wanted the middle one, which was the bigger gold one.
Yes. Is it actually bigger, or is it just kind of brought out a little bit in the picture?
I can't tell. I don't know. I don't know if it is or not. It looks bigger in the picture, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. Sure does.
Well, I say this, that the medals look a hell of a lot better than our United States outfits. So I'm sticking to that.
Listen, Ralph Lauren would be very upset with you for even saying that, okay? That you're messing with greatness.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Ralph Lauren should design American outfits and not French ones.
Again, I would just be happy to wear it. You put a, I'll wear whatever you want. Let me walk on out there. Come on. The top 100... our top 99 sexiest Olympic athletes. Sexiest Olympic athletes. They've got pictures, Glenn. You are going to want to see this.
I'm already looking through them. I'm just looking through them now. Yeah.
Yeah, and out of 199 people, Boyd Martin comes in at number 11. Woo-hoo! Boyd Martin, baby. So Boyd on the eventing team, obviously, from Australia, now an American, is number 11 in the sexiest Olympic athletes. And I must say that he should have been higher or lower because they're, I don't know, if you look through the whole list, it's very entertaining. But I would also like to say that there are some other people I thought that should be a little bit higher up on the list as well, because Boyd Martin should be like in the top two or three, honestly. Then, if you look at number 20, David Oliver, what's up? Number 37, James Magnussen, who's an Australian swimmer, is wearing a Speedo. And Speedos are not good looks for many people, except for James Magnuson, who is rocking the Speedo in this picture, number 37. I looked at, I did this whole list just for our listeners, Glenn. And number 40, Jaden Hadler, he's an Aussie swimmer, again, in the pool, but not in the Speedo, but still looking good. Number 49, Costa Barbosa, the New Zealand soccer player. 74, Oliver Buff. He plays soccer for Sweden. His name is Oliver Buff. Okay. He's a hottie.
I got to tell, can I throw one in here while I'm looking at the picture?
Sure. It better be a hot guy.
No, it's not a hot guy. It's number 17. I guess it's number 17. I don't see the numbering on here. But anyway, it looks like number 17. And boy, the redneck in me comes out with this girl. Corey Bell, something like that.
Coddle.
And she's the one standing there in the USA shirt with a shotgun over her shoulders. That's pretty good. Yeah.
She's a shooter. Oh, you like her. So, yeah, she's actually, it says here they have fun facts on the side, and she's from Alaska. So, of course, she was raised with a gun.
She's going to go. You can continue with the show. I'll just check out the rest of these.
Keep looking. Look at number 78. Dude, what is wrong with that guy? How did he make the list? Whew, he looks like he's been up for 3 days. Number 81, loving it. Thank you, Jennifer. Roger Federer of the Swiss tennis team. He is a cutie, too. So you can go through this list, and you can pick your own favorites. Zara Phillips actually made the list coming in at the very end. So enjoy the list of hot Olympic athletes. And if you agree with me, that some of these should have been a little bit higher up. And some of the ones that are higher above Boyd Martin should not have been there. I'm just saying.
I got to say, though, that they don't have him looking just super sexy. Do you think that's super sexy, just him standing there in a T-shirt?
No, it's a bizarre picture. I thought, because I clicked on it, and I went straight to him, and I thought he's wearing, like, an Olympic T-shirt, standing there with jeans and pants in his pocket, and I thought, well, maybe everybody, they just took pictures of everybody in their country's shirts, and it's definitely not the case. They have pictures of people swimming, playing golf, soccer. I mean, at least take a picture of him with Neville Bardos.
Yeah.
He looks way sexier when he's next to a horse.
I know. I know. Hey, did you speak of the Olympics and the Olympic Village? And I'm just seeing that there's a couple of the female soccer players that have made this top sexiest 100. And let me tell you, there's some gorgeous soccer players. But one of them from the last Olympics, if you remember, Hope Solo, who became so popular, she came out and spilled the beans on the Olympic Village and had a lot to say. Did you see any of those articles?
No, but Hope is a very outspoken young lady. She was on Dancing with the Stars. And so I feel like I know her. And she was always talk too much. And if you saw her on there, you're just like, you're watching her, and you're like, Hope, honey, shh, be quiet. Stop talking. Just stop.
I mean, she's a very good-looking woman.
Yeah, and she is a very good dancer. She was, I think she came in second, maybe third. Anyway, so what did she say about the Olympic Village?
Apparently, she said she did some dancing in the Olympic Village, too. Apparently, the Olympic Village is quite the wild place. There's actually a book that has come out. I'm just trying to find the name of it here, and I haven't found it. But there's a book that just came out about the Olympic Villages and what they've been like. And apparently, the most popular things in the Olympic Village are smuggled alcohol and condoms. The last Olympics, the Olympic Committee actually would handed out free condoms. That was part of the thing they decided, well, we better just hand out these free condoms, because they kept having the Olympians going off-site to try and go to stores to buy condoms. So they started handing them out. You could just go pick up as many as you wanted. They ran out of 70,000 of them. Now, they think that some of them were collecting them because they had the Olympic logo on them.
No.
On the packaging.
Condoms with the Olympic logo.
I'm not sure the condom did, but the packaging did.
That's
hilarious. It didn't light up at night either, I don't think. But so she apparently said it's just a free-for-all, partying all night. Everybody hooks up with somebody, married, single, doesn't matter, because apparently in the past, not so much now, I guess, happened in the past. What happened to Olympic Village stayed in the Olympic Village. And she said, you know, these people get done with their competitions. They've been working for it for their lifetime. Their adrenaline's all hopped up, and basically they just want to sleep with someone. And you've got what, thousands of the best-looking, as judged by your last thing, thousands of the best-looking people in the world there. So it's natural that they'd all just want to hook up. And apparently that's what happens, since there's a lot of hooking up goes on. And a lot of alcohol, which is not allowed in the Olympic Village, which they all smuggle in soda containers and things like that.
So I'm doing some Olympic condom research, if you will. And in the last Olympic, in the Sydney Olympic Games, health officials distributed 70,000 condoms to the visiting athletes. Okay. Then if you head to, let's see, the next Olympic Games that were the Winter Olympic Games in, where was the last Winter Olympic Games? I've lost my
In
Vancouver. Vancouver, yeah. 2010. They went from 70,000 to 100,000 condoms were distributed at the 2010 Vancouver Olympics. Do you know how many they have organized and arranged to have made for this London Olympics?
No.
They're upping the numbers, my friend, all the way to 150,000 condoms are going to be packed into dispensers around the games venues. It's an unbelievable number of condoms. How many athletes are there?
Are there, thousands? Maybe, I don't think it hits 10,000. There's 200 equestrians, so, you know, it can't hit 10,000.
That's crazy. That's a lot of sex.
That's a lot of sex.
I found the article that you're talking about with Hope Solo. I have got to become an Olympic athlete just to go watch what's going on. She said that she was shocked by the antics she witnessed in Beijing. She said people were doing it right out in the open on the grass between buildings. People were getting down and dirty. Athletes are extremists when they're in training. It's laser focus. When they go out for a drink, it's 20 drinks.
She said the American team... last time, I don't know whether it was a soccer team or just the athletes in general. I didn't catch this part. But she said that they had an appearance on the Today Show, and so they all went out partying the night before, and they didn't stop. Nobody went to bed, and they went to the Today Show drunk. She said, if you look back at it, you'll see that we were all drunk at the Today Show the next day. So she's a wild one. I'm voting, by the way. I'm putting in the official vote for all the guys out there. If you go to Jamie's link to the Sexiest Athletes by Fox, is it Fox? Yeah, Fox Sports.
Yeah.
I'm voting for Rami Tarangel, who's number 82. She's a German judo player, and she apparently has posed for the German version of Playboy after her 2008 Olympic Games in Beijing. And my guess is she was one of the ones partying, because she is the hottest judo person I've ever seen.
Wow. I'm clicking on, I'm looking for her. It's like a modeling show. This is actually her Playboy photo.
It probably
Jeez.
Is. She'll be lining up for the free condoms at the thingy.
You would wish. She'd, you know.
I have a different thing. Let's get off of this topic and go on to, how about the top 10 horse people personalities?
Did you know there are 23,500 competitors and backroom staff in the London Olympics?
All right, so that's, you said 150,000 condoms, so that's six
not
per
enough.
Person.
It's not enough. Okay, carry on.
All right, let's get to something a little more on topic here, and I'm opening it up now. This was put out by, Jennifer, you had it here, put out by ponybox.com, the website ponybox.com, and which is a blog, I believe. And it was the top 10 horse people personalities, and this is in her opinion. So I kind of like this, though. There were some on here that we're all going to relate to. You'll relate to these, I guarantee you. And number 10 on the list was the beautifier. It's the type of person who spends more time spiffing their horse up than doing riding. They spend every waking moment grooming, primping, prodding, and basically don't ride at all. We all know those, don't you? Didn't you run into those in the past?
Oh, my gosh. I remember going to the barn, and there was always, you know, these, like, two girls in the cross ties that would stand there and hog the cross ties because there was only three cross sets of cross ties, and you would have to wait for them, and they would be just dinking around with their horses, braiding their manes and polishing their hooves, and you'd, they would always say to me, are you going to ride today? Like, what the hell? I'm here. Of course I'm going to ride. Like, who goes to the barn and doesn't ride? Well, they did. Yeah, so I know exactly who you're talking about.
And there's an opposite of that person, too, and it's the person who goes out and doesn't even brush the horse, throws the saddle pads on over the mud and just rides and never brushes their horse. So there is an opposite to that. But what she does say here is you do want to get to know the beautifier, because when their horse is done and they have nothing to do because they won't ride, they sometimes will offer to do yours, and that's the person you want doing your horse, your horse. They're good at it. Number nine is the dreamer. There, she says, these people can be a good refresher after a long week or two filled with lessons and training. They remind you of the things they plan for both in the future regarding horses and can usually turn a negative outlook into a positive one quickly. However, they usually accomplish nothing with their own horse. She says, these are great friends to have around because they make you feel good about yourself, the dreamer.
The dreamer. Okay, so it's like somebody who's like, all I could think of when you said the dreamer was like a 12-year-old who was like, I'm going to be in the Olympics someday, because that was me, and I'm sure most of our listeners, I'm going to be in the Olympics someday, and those people are good to be around. I didn't quite agree with the second half of that.
Yes, I don't know if I do either, but to with you and Jen after the results last weekend, you know, in 4 years, you'll be getting condoms out of the dispenser at the Olympics.
Woohoo! Yeah, baby. Win one novice. Now I'm set for the Olympic Games.
There you go. You signed up. You're qualified already. Number
in
eight,
four
the
years,
know-it-all.
My horse is going to be 15. I don't think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's an older gentleman as far as Olympic athletes go. He's a little behind.
Well, look at Lucinda Frederick's horse was 18 or 19, and she won the Rolex on it.
Yeah, that's a little different. That's an amazing horse. Henley Britannia. Whatever. Go ahead. Carry on.
Number eight, the know-it-all. Boy. And it doesn't have to be horses. This is just life in general. These people are often referred to as walking Googlies. Or walking Googles, she says. If you have a question, ask this person, but be careful to do your research before you go ride with them, or else they'll be correcting you left and right. Know-it-alls can be helpful at times, so get to know one, but not too closely.
Yeah, I think that when I heard know-it-all, I thought of that person in the barn, or maybe the owner of the barn, who tells you how to do whatever you're doing at the moment that you're doing it.
And everything you do is wrong. It's just not, or just not quite right. Yeah, it's just not quite right.
Yeah. Why are you doing that? What are you doing? What is that? Why is that? You need to use this product. Oh, well, here's what you need to do. If I heard that one more time in one of the barns I boarded at, well, here's what you need to do, or what you should do is. Whenever I hear that, I just shut down now.
It is one of the nice things about having, you know, there's positive and negatives of having the horses home at your own house. One of the positives is you don't have to hear that anymore. One of the negatives is that you don't like in our situation, Jennifer, doesn't have people to hang out at the barn, because sometimes you do make really good friends at the barn. So that is one of the negatives. But number seven.
I got a negative. Yeah. So here's a negative is when your horse Jet is so food aggressive that he double barrels his automatic waterer, flips it over, breaks it, and you don't notice it until the next morning when all three of the stalls are completely flooded. And I'm talking like knee-deep. You know what Chad and I had to do after yesterday morning? All we did was take buckets and scoop water out of the stalls, and then we had to strip everything out of there, and they're currently sitting there drying. Oh, my gosh. It was such a mess. And that's amazing.
And not to mention the cost of those automatic waters aren't cheap either.
No, they are not. Yeah, so he loses his waterer. He now gets a big, giant bucket again. We tried to get fancy. We tried to give him something he would like, not so much. He's now going to get a giant muck tub full of water.
Back muck to the tub original. For him.
Yeah.
See these prima donnas, they win one event and look how they get. That's how they get.
You know what's really bad is that as we're scooping out wet poop and just, I mean, dirt, I mean, it's just mud, and now we're going to have to bring in more dirt and re-level the stalls. That's this morning's chore, is as my husband is scooping poop with a shovel and poop with muddy water into a wheelbarrow, he says to me, I just don't know why I even got an education. Why did I spend this much money on an education? I'm like, honey, we're just cleaning a stall here, buddy. It's not the end of your educational career. It's like, just scoop the poop and move on.
That's funny.
Yeah.
The 7 is the snob. I don't think we need to even explain what that one is. We all know what that is. So we'll go on to number 6. The down-to-earth person. Now, what she says is this person is usually the most pleasurable to be around. They are not crazy unless the moment calls for it. And these are the most common types of horse people, in my experience at least. And I would say, in general, that's true. You do see a lot of down-to-earth people that are horse people because they have to be. It's just required.
Yeah. Yep.
I agree with that one. Number five is the fashionista. And we knew these. We used to have a couple at our barn. And by the way, they looked really out of place at our barn. And she says, this is the person that will have the latest equestrian apparel trends and tend to put up with itchy breeches or slippery gloves, all in the name of fashion. Or if you're at the barn and you decide that you're going to have a work day, maybe you're going to do hay, or you're gonna clean stalls that have been flooded, and they show up in their finest outfits because they cannot put the dirty clothes. They cannot put, you know, the total barn clothes on. They just can't wear those clothes. So they show up to help you out in their finest to put up hay. There are those.
You're lucky if they help you put up hay. But I have to challenge our listeners because I have seen something that I don't think anybody else has ever seen before, as far as fashionistas go in the barn. And her name was Sandra. And Sandra bought a barn that I boarded at when I was in Atlanta. And Sandra's actually the person I bought my warm blood from it as a song, because she couldn't really ride it, because she was one of the people that looked really good out at the barn but never rode, that kind of person. Just the kind of person you're talking about. But Sandra refused to wear boots. Refused. Would not come into the barn wearing anything but, let me paint a picture here.
What'd she wear?
Really nice, like, carrot top, you know, the very brand new fashion from Carrots, you know, with the zipper tops and anything cute. Of course, very low cut, unzipped, so you would see the cleave coming out the top. And then the most fashionable riding pants that you could imagine. I mean, expensive $150, $200 pairs of pants. Underneath that, high heels.
What?
In the barn. Of course, she didn't do much with the horses. Let me point this out. In the barn. I don't know. I don't know if I ever actually saw her ride, so I can't say that there was a transition into boot when she would actually get on the horse, because I never saw her ride. I'm not kidding you. They ended up paving the parking lot of the barn was gravel. She had it paved so she could walk across it. Has anybody else seen that? You know, somebody in high heels and riding pants, and we're talking all the time. Never saw her without them. I can get people on to verify this. Old boarders I'm still in touch with, we still laugh about it. Why are you typing? Who's typing?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I lost my sound there for a second. All right, that's good. Yeah. Number 4 is the overachiever. We'll go through the last 4 real quickly. And we all see the overachiever. We've known a few of those. We had one or two at our barn where they're constantly working their horses. They are going to work that horse until that horse gets it. And they're the ones that never really give their horses a break. Every day they're at the same thing. You know, they're drilling and and drilling in the arena, and they never take it out for a nice casual ride because that's not accomplishing anything, and you know, we all know the overachiever. Number three is the only into horses because they're pretty people. And she said, this person will usually miss lessons for excuses like sleeping or bruising a thumb. Steer clear of this person while at the barn. They're the people that are doing it for, you know, I never quite understood why those people are doing it. We all know one or two of those, but I'm not sure why they do it. Just to be part of the group? Yeah.
No clue.
Number two is the exaggerator. If you haven't met one of these yet, you probably will eventually. This person loves to stretch the truth as far as possible. And my contention is that they're usually married to a guy who's a fisherman.
If you don't know the exaggerator, it's because you are that person. Because everybody has one. And, yeah, I would like to think, oh, my God, my horse literally jumped the moon, okay? He's amazing. And that's not literal. And so, yes, they probably use the word literally a lot, and nothing is actually literal.
That's true. And number one is the crazy trainer. And I love her description here. She says, this type of horse person usually gives lessons to younger kids. They were valuable trainers and would bring in blue ribbons in their day about 15 years ago. Now they have no concept of the word safety and would rather watch young beginners stand on their horses while playing a good round of red light, green light than watch their favorite student perform a dressage test. The crazy trainer. And I think everybody runs across a crazy trainer at one time or another.
Yes, without a doubt. Well, good list, Glenn. I appreciate it.
There you go. Thank you to theponybox.com for that list.
Coach Jen here, host of the Horse Tip Daily Show on the Horse Radio Network. The way consumers interact with the brands they have trusted for years and those they are about to fall in love with for the first time is becoming more and more mobile, literally, and will continue to do so for the foreseeable future. Podcasts or internet radio shows like this one combine the new consumer preference for on-demand information and entertainment with the power of niche market audiences. Advertising on the Horse Radio Network podcasts allows you to reach the equestrian consumer using today's preferred on-demand delivery system. It's cost-effective and flexible, able to reinforce your existing marketing and social media strategies. To learn more about advertising on this show or any of the shows on the Horse Radio Network, contact us at 859-951-2022 or you can email us at glenn@horseradionetwork.com. That's Glenn with two N's at horseradionetwork.com. Come and join the Horse Radio Network family. You'll enjoy the ride.
Hey, I got something for you to do in your off season. When you're, when there's no events and, it's coming up, you're going to have some dry time here for a couple months. I think you should train for something that's coming to Arizona called the Super Spartan Obstacle Race. And, it's just a little race of 8 miles with 20 obstacles. And it says a battlefield of insane mud running with 15 or more obstacles to test your physical strength and mental resolve. This mud fest of a race will have many trials to push you to your limits that any man or woman can complete. This endurance race consists of mud runs, trails, and both mental and physical obstacles. Now, I watched the video for this, and this statement that they have here is understating it a lot. I mean, you're crawling through mud. You're doing things you see the special forces doing. They have guys with big sticks with big padded things in the end beating you along the way and trying to knock you over. You're climbing walls, and you're just covered in mud. And you're doing 8 miles and 20 obstacles of that. It's sort of like your own little cross-country course, only there's no horse, just you.
Okay, that sounds awful. How long is the entire thing?
8 miles. So the good news is after you complete your painful journey, there will be live music and a catered meal to soothe your aching joints. And you want to know what the really good news is? The really good news is for doing all of that and just about killing yourself, you get the top three males and the top three females get to compete in the Spartan Beast. Now, the Spartan Beast is actually bigger than that even. It's like 20 miles with 25 obstacles, and they call it the Obstacle Race from Hell. So there you go. If you win, you get to go do the other one.
Oh, my God. No thanks. So basically what you're saying is that you get to get beat up, covered in mud, and run 8 miles. You know, I get a pebble in my shoe for 10 steps, and I've got a blister. Can you imagine the chafing that goes on being covered in mud and running 8 miles?
This obstacle race is becoming hugely popular in the United States now. It was started by a couple of endurance, what they call endurance racers, who do, you know, the crazy guys that do 250 miles or whatever, and they were bored with that. So, and, triathlons weren't challenging anymore. So these three guys started these obstacle races along with a special forces guy from England. And now they've become hugely popular all across the country. Not for me, thank you very much. I won't be running in any Spartan races anytime soon.
No, and they call them, I think, also the mud runs. And they're very popular with the military guys that Chad is friends with. I say Chad is friends. Chad's friends are interested in it. There's no way my husband would do that. No way. He doesn't care. he doesn't need to do that. He's got nothing to prove. But he goes.
I don't know if they'd let him do it. He's a major and an F-16 fighter pilot. They have large insurance policy on him. I don't think they want him doing that. It's against his contract or something. Hey, I got a list for you. Glenn's crappy list for this Wednesday. I see a couple comments on Facebook, people waiting to hear it. So let's make sure we get it in before our first guest. This was taken from a website, and it was the smartest and dumbest dogs. Now, this is not a list that Jamie and I put together. I got it off this website. And now it said smartest dog breeds depends on what defines a smart dog. Is the ability to wrap people around their claws who get in their way, or, you know, the smart ones are the ones who get whatever they want, you know, that kind of thing. But they apparently did this study and determined what were the smartest and dumbest dog breeds. Now, do you have any guesses, Jamie, what the smartest dog breeds would be?
Well, I have two English Shepherds, and I'm not putting them on the top of the list. However, I would say that I have had the pleasure of having Border Collies in the past, and those have got to be the smartest dogs.
Absolutely right. Ding, 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 ding. Number one on the list is the Border Collie. And I think everybody would agree with that. I don't think anybody's going to argue with the Border Collies are just smart dogs.
Too smart.
Nobody's
going to. Too smart.
Yeah, exactly. So they are number one on the list. Also on the list of the smartest breeds are the Australopiee. That's a new one
you
on me.
You
I don't know anything
there.
About
say that. Say that again, Glenn.
Kelpie. K-E-L-P-I-E. I don't know what an Australian Kelpie is. The Poodle. Believe it or not, is on the smartest list.
Yeah, I've seen that before. I would like to say that before you go on, my English Shepherds are very closely related to the Border Collie, but Zenyatta is definitely smarter than her brother, who's just kind of an idiot boomer. But Zenyatta is only half smart, because here's what she does, and this is great when it's about 117 degrees outside, and you put them outside and say, I'm going to feed. Well, Zenyatta decides that she's ready to come back in, and so she goes to the back, and she opens the door. She actually knows how to jump up on the door, grab the handle, pull the handle down, and push the door in. You would think that would be very smart, right? That sounds pretty smart. Well, she doesn't know how to close the door. So that's the problem with the smart dogs only being kind of smart, because then they don't know how to close the door as well.
She was a wild young Mustang, no bridle, no reins, full of fire and spirit inside. by the horse that nobody could ride. Then down out of Cheyenne came a quiet and shy man today to try something that no man had tried. He sat down in the warm sun, a hundred yards away from the horse. Nobody could ride.
Janie, it's one of my favorite shows of the year. Last year we did it, and this year we actually have some science to it because Edison Research conducted a nationwide study, and I was really impressed, happy to see this, because the study was of more than 200 women aged 30 to 49, which is our exact demographic for the show. 70% of our listeners are women aged 30 to 49, so our listeners should be able to relate to this study. And what they asked was, which Christmas songs do they hate the most? And because we're in that time of the year, and of course, Jamie and I love doing this kind of stuff. And then we're going to give you the top 10 Christmas songs they hated the most. I have little clips of all of them here. And then Jamie, Jennifer, and I are going to give you our picks for our most hated Christmas songs. And it was funny because I was trying to think of my favorite Christmas song, but I have a lot of favorites. Isn't it easier to pick your most hated something than your favorite something?
You know, I think you're right, because a couple of them are, I'm like, I love that song, but I couldn't have thought of it. But if you walk around, and I did this yesterday, especially Christmas tree shopping, I walk around and you go, hey, what's your least favorite Christmas song of all time? The one you hate the most. Everybody goes, this one. Everybody has an answer. I mean, there's one song that just grates on your brain, and there's several of them on this list that are just going to irritate you. Just going to irritate you.
And then there's a couple that I said, why is it on this list? I don't get why this one's on the list, but we'll find out. And then we're going to find out a little bit later. I asked some of our listeners yesterday what they thought, so we'll give you some of their feelings too. But let's start with number 10, according to Edison Research, an actual real study of women ages 30 to 49. This is the 10th worst Christmas song of the season. And I got to say, I agree with this one. Or is that little Jimmy Boyd, and I saw Mommy kissing Santa Claus. Do you know that this was done when he was actually 13 years old when he recorded this back in the 50s? Get this. You're going to love this, Jamie, because I think we both hate this song. So Columbia record executives were baffled by the song's popularity because when it came out in the early 50s, it sold 2.5 million records in the first week. This was, you remember, they were actually had to go out and buy records at that time. They weren't downloading sound files. And get this, he's 13 years old. The record went to number one on the charts and stayed there. They gave him, there's a horse connection here, because little Jimmy Boyd owned horses. So Columbia presented him with a silver-mounted saddle. Inscribed on the silver plate in the back of the saddle were the words presented by Columbia Records to Jimmy Boyd commemorating his 3 millionth record of I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. That was still back in the 50s. Do you know how many copies this has sold since then?
Oh, God. Do I want to know?
60 million copies.
People have bought that song 60 million times. And that kid is 13 years old. He sounds like he's 7. Do you know that the moment, do they have this in the story? The second that he hit end on the recording of that, his voice changed. How is that kid 13?
So we all agree on that one.
That was awful. But good for him for making the cash. She made the money.
I bet you he lived on that for the rest of his life, on the residuals from that one song. It's probably all he needed.
His kids are living on the residuals from that song.
Here we go. Number 9. I don't get this one.
Oh. You don't get this one?
I don't get why it's on the list. It's Mannheim Steamroller. Maybe people are just sick of it because it's been played to death in every mall and store and every video that's on YouTube forever.
Glenn, what year is it right now?
2013.
Pretty darn close. Do you know when the synthesizer went out of style in music? 1984. People don't use synthesizers to make music anymore. That song is so 1984, and it is so bad, and it is so it's like a period piece. It just needs to go away. That is a god awful thing. You like the orchestra stuff. I get it, but that is just awful.
Yeah, but I don't think you can really compare, actually, Mannheim Steamroller with Trans-Siberian Orchestra. There's a big difference between the two. Yeah. So, this one Jennifer's going to be upset with because she likes him. So let's listen to number 8 on the worst songs by the Nielsen or by the Edison Research.
Oh, come, Emmanuel. And ransom captive Israel that mourns in lonely exile here until the Son of God.
Now that's Neil Diamond's version of O Come Emmanuel. You like Neil Diamond, Jennifer. Do you like this one?
I'm sorry, this is not his best effort. This song should not be sung by a single human being. It requires at least 35 voices and an organ.
Amen, sister. Amen. Like, that's just awful. That's just awful. Doesn't need to be doing that. Now, I don't know if I've heard number 7 ever, so I'm excited to hear it, but I want to let you know that number 6 is one of my favorite Christmas songs of all time. So let's hear number 7.
You've heard this before, I guarantee you, Jamie. Oh, wait a minute. It's tug up here. There it goes.
I'll have a blue at Christmas without you. I'll feel so blue just thinking about you.
I thought that one was better than Elvis, actually.
You know what this whole entire segment is reminding me of? Just every one of these songs is taking me straight back to 1994 when I worked as a greeter at the Gap for the holiday season. Did all the crap that was played in that store over and over and over again for like 3 months. I worked there for like 3 months, and that's it. They started playing Christmas songs before Halloween. It's killing me.
The next one, there's two versions of this, and I'm just saying this because so you know which version I'm going to play, seeing it's apparently one of your favorite songs. There's two versions of this. This is the one where I didn't have to beep out the language. So.
Well.
The stirs a breathy singing. It is the night of our dear Savior's baby. Oh, holy night.
I'm sorry, that's funny every time. And then you didn't even record. The best part is when he hits the high note at the end. Oh.
Now, there's another version of this. Do you remember the one? By the way, that was Cartman from South Park. And you talked about the religious mothers group being mad about Harry Potter. They should have been up in arms over this version. But the Cartman, or the other version of it, he was getting zapped by a taser gun every time he would mess up the words. Do you remember that version?
You definitely can't play that one.
No, there was too much swearing in that version, so I couldn't play that. And besides, we'd have those groups after us too. Well, next one I think everybody agrees on. When it came out, it was such a novelty and one of my mom's favorite songs of all time.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve.
Yeah, that's all we need of that one.
You can say there's no such thing as... You know what, Glenn? I must say that that is one of the songs that you have to hear at least once a year, just so you can get that chills up and down your spine, just like you just did, like, okay, that's enough. But it's Christmas.
It's like Monster Mash. You have to hear that at the Halloween once.
It's just so, exactly. I love this song because it was actually written about my grandma. My grandma would have done all those things.
Yeah, she did imbibe a bit, so that's probably true. Yeah. I don't ever remember going to Jennifer's grandma's house for the holidays, whether it was at noontime or 7 o'clock at night when she had already finished half the bottle. And it was that way every time. It never failed.
Man, that's a fun grandma right there. That's a woman that knows how to party.
My grandma drove a Mustang.
She did.
Your grandma's right awesome.
Right,
she
up
bought
the end,
it too.
Fantastic. She's awesome.
Oh, the next one, I cannot stand anything this person sings ever, so this is going to send both of me. Oh, God, I hate this.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
That's like
jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. We're dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. All the fields we go, laughing all the way.
Oh, God.
You know what? I've never heard that one, and you know why? Because that's awful. That's Barbara Streisand, like, doing
that's
her
the worst
own
rendition.
Yeah, that's Barbara Streisand doing her own rendition of Jingle Bells. That was god-awful. And you know, she's in a new holiday movie this year, so I'm sure you'll be running out to see it, Glenn.
I just can't stand Barbara Streisand. It just is like the chalkboard thing, you know? It just, I can't stand her. And this one, it sounds like she's on speed. You
oh,
know,
my God.
900 miles an hour.
Yeah, I was shocked when that started playing. I've never heard that before, and I'm like, what is wrong with her? This thing is in fast forward. Slow it down. But speaking of South Park, they actually did a whole episode on Barbara Streisand. You'll have to go check that one out. It's a timeless classic is what it is.
I'll have to check that out. I used to watch South Park all the time, but I haven't seen it in years. I actually haven't watched it. Are they still making new ones?
Oh, yeah. New ones, and yeah, all the time. It's so topical. But South Park came up with it. Barbara Streisand turns into a monster alien thing, robot, and just starts attacking people. It's great.
Well, that's appropriate, actually. I think that's totally perfect. Number three on the list of the worst Christmas songs of the season is this.
All I want for Christmas is my toothbrush. My toothbrush. See, my toothbrush. Gee, if I could only have my toothbrush. And I could wish you Merry Christmas.
Every year, my mother could not wait to hear that song. I think that was a favorite of grandma's everywhere.
Oh my God.
That was Spike Jones, by the way.
Speaking of cartoons, do you guys ever watch Family Guy? Because that sounds like the molester guy from next door. And those who watch the show know exactly who I'm talking about.
Well, that lead vocal was by George Rock. It was recorded by Spike Jones and his City Slickers in December of 6 of 47. That version reached the top of the pop charts in 1948 and 1949. Twice that thing went to the top of the charts. There you go. They didn't have much to choose from back then. The next one, I totally agree with this one.
Someone found a lighted house late one night, and he saw through the window a sight. A big man in a chair, his little tiny bit everywhere. He's a man up with all up the toys.
That was awful. What was that? Glenn couldn't stand it. He tipped over and knocked over his microphone, I think.
All right. Well, I was thinking that you do the Beach Boys and you expect that little Sand Dick, ooh little Sand Dick, ooh little Sand Dick, which is like what they say through the entire song. So that was just awful, but apparently that, the Beach Boys, The Man With All the Toys, is a Christmas song written by Brian Wilson and Mike Love, four of the Beach Boys, released on their 1964 album, and shoot me if I ever buy this album. And do you know anybody that did buy the Beach Boys Christmas album that year, 1964? Beach Boys Christmas album.
I'm back. Sorry about that.
Sorry. Well, that one had apparently some success, and then, but the Christmas single of the year in 1963 was "Ooh, Little Sandy, Ooh, Little Sandy." Shoot me. That one worked.
I got to tell you, I know there's a lot of Beach Boys fans out there, and we're probably going to get some hate mail on our Facebook page. But
bring
if you've
on,
ever,
I don't care.
if you've ever seen the Beach Boys in person, they suck. They're in studio. They are a studio band. I mean, and to this day, they're still out. We saw them. I don't know where we ran into them. It wasn't on purpose. It was somewhere. And they just are awful. They're just awful. Ugh. They couldn't sing then, and they can't sing now as seniors.
Well, I must say about the Beach Boys, all I can think of is, and this is me being a kid when this happened, but I remember when the Beach Boys were on Full House, the TV show Full House, and Uncle Jesse started playing with the Beach Boys, and turns out, like, later on in life, he actually toured with the Beach Boys. The guy from Full House joined the Beach Boys band. That's how bad it is, okay? That's bad. Uncle Jesse is your drummer, okay? Awful.
And the number one most hated song, and I think some people are going to be surprised by this, the number one and most hated song of this holiday season is... What I didn't realize is that was actually made in 1955 by a guy by the name of Don Charles in Copenhagen, Denmark.
You know what? That, again, it's much like the synthesizer with Mannheim Steamroller. Like, I had a Casio keyboard when I was 7 that I could have done that song on. And here it's it
probably, is. It's probably done on one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that's the worst one. The dog's barking, apparently. He's not a real favorite of women between the ages of 30 and 49 anymore. Well, let's talk about which ones we hate the most. And actually, none of us had one that was on that list, which was kind of surprising. But, Jamie, this, get your the fingers on the chalkboard ready, because here you go. This is Jamie's most hated song. Why are you hating on George Michael like that?
That's just awful. I'm listening to myself. I must hate everything from the 80s. But dear God, the Gap played that song every 45 minutes for the entire 3 months that they played Christmas songs. And George Michael should be singing Nothing Religious. Okay? Nothing.
There are certain people that should cover certain songs, and then there are ones that just shouldn't be covered by those people. And obviously, George Michael and I Gave You My Heart and Neil Diamond with O Come Emmanuel are two that we definitely have on that list. This one.
I gave it away last Christmas.
Yeah. You shouldn't be covering it either, by the way. This one, we're going to have to ask Jennifer why she hates it so much. You want me to let it keep playing, Jennifer, or chat enough?
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge.
The anything! Day... Did you just hit another button?
Why do you not like the little drummer boy, poor little guy, drumming his little drum there?
You may not really be able to relate to this, Glenn. Jamie, when you were in elementary school, were you required by your demonic parents to be in chorus or choir?
You know, my parents gave up on my singing abilities a long time ago, Jen, so no, I was not. But all I can see is a bunch of little kids standing there with their hands clasped, one on top of the other. Oh, that's awful, though. So that dredges up that
memory. I was in the section of the chorus that held up the little handmade sign with green sparkly stuff that had the S on it when we sang the Christmas song, because I sung that bad, even in elementary school choir. So whenever we did Little Drummer Boy, which was required, I had to do the pa-rump-a-rump, pa-pa-pum-pum-pum part. And I absolutely, positively despise that song.
Now, the next one, the one I despise the most, has been remade by, I think, every musician. I looked at the list of people who have covered this, and I think every musician that ever thought they could sing in the last 50 years has made a copy of this song. And I'll tell you what, they play it endlessly at malls everywhere, and when I hear it come on, I just want to puke, and here it is.
You see, it's cold outside.
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I gotta go away.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I just wanted to leave. Just leave in the first dance so we don't have to listen to the rest of the song.
So very nice.
I'll hold your
I don't care if it's cold. Go out and freeze
death.
Like
my
mother will start to worry.
Beautiful, what's your hurry?
My father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace
now
roar.
Now really, I've got to scurry.
Beautiful, please.
Ugh.
I'm sorry. I totally disagree. I love that song. That song, Glenn, let me tell you why I love that song. That song was written in 1948, okay? 1948. And do you know what that song is about? That is about a man talking a woman into shagging him all night long. At 1948! Come on! Baby.
All right, do that part or leave. Just don't sing the rest of the song. I'm fine with that happening. I'm all for that, but
That is a salacious, racy song in 1948. It's like basically, baby, take your clothes off, leave them on the floor. I got the fire going. I'm going to get you drunk, and we're going to do it. That song's awesome.
Oh, it was awful. What an awful song. Well, those are our picks. Now, the audience chimed in, and apparently, well, let's see. Excuse me. Grandma got run over by a reindeer is on there, of course. Last Christmas, Katie said, was her most hated song.
Yeah, girl.
Robert Dunn chimed in with the Christmas shoes thing. What's that one?
This song, it came out, it's like a country song, kind of, but it is like the saddest song, will make you cry. It's about a little boy that is standing in line, and he wants to buy some Christmas shoes for his mom, and he's standing in line, and he doesn't have enough money. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
No, I know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah, so he stands in line, and then he doesn't have the money, and the guy in line gives him the shoes. The guy telling him, singing the song, gives him the money for the shoes. He's like, yeah, because my mom's dying of cancer, and I got to get these shoes back to her because she wanted new shoes for heaven. Like, oh, my God, why are we just
crying? This song, all by itself, is responsible for increasing the suicide rate at Christmas time 1 point.
Amen.
Mike Mumford chimes in, I really dislike the Chipmunks. Doreen says the 12 Days of Christmas, any version, I don't care. So she apparently, all 12 Days of Christmas. I think she has ADD, Doreen, probably.
Well, that was Chad, too. He's like, anytime they do 5 golden rings, he's like, I want to stick an ice pick in my ear.
Jingle Bell Rock, apparently, is not a favorite. And then also Last Christmas. So that was there as well.
Yep, Last Christmas, George Michael. I'm telling you, those of us that grew up, like, were born in the late 70s and had to listen to that song all the way through the 80s, still playing in the mall every year. Good God, it's awful. Robert Grantham wanted to ask you a question, Glenn. He wanted to know, what on earth is wrong with Porky Pig's Blue Christmas?
Let me put it this way. If I have to explain it, well, you know, let's just, okay, let me see here. Hold on 1 second. This is for Robert. What's wrong with this?
I'll have a every Christmas without you. I'll you feel so every blue. It'll be just
and wasn't such a perfect landing. Yeah, I'm still alive, not sure how I survived. It was a hell of a ride till it ended. I guess that's what you get when you leave. You don't always end up on your feet. Oh, there's easier ways I could go.
And that's a wrap, folks. Thanks for listening. You can listen to all of the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. Now go ride your horse.